So years ago, when I first started teaching these patchwork lectures, I would come in hauling through sleet, rain, snow, or sunshine, bins of supplies and flowers and tape player and coffee and treats and candles and a raggedy-ass flip chart and newsprint. And Joanne Gago came early one evening and caught me red-handed and took pity on me. And forever after arrived on time to help me lug. Even helped me set up chairs, run the vacuum cleaner, and then one night she and Billy and I were running around, crawling in closets and behind the altar in the church trying to find tape to hang up the newsprint on the wall. And then Trudy and Billy and Judy, bit by bit, started taking on pieces for me and with me. And then there was all of you. I just looked and saw Deb and Gail and Becky, who were around to help me load up the car and go home. I want you to know that tonight I arrived with my notes and the lecture that I am to teach. I brought my little meditation bell, but there was already one set up here. So I wanted to say thanks to the Pittsburgh Pathwork Board, who handles everything in the background seamlessly, and brings their creative talents and their updated technology so that rather than my scratching on a pad that you can barely see and looking in dark spaces to find tape to hold the paper up, we now have beautiful graphics delivered by Billy Weil. Joanne is still at the helm with modern day technology. She has like four pieces of equipment there, downloading music and projecting. So I just wanted to thank you all. I wanted to acknowledge our movement and our progress. And I want to introduce you to the board, the Pittsburgh Pathwork Board, who does so much work in the background. You would have no idea for every event that we have to support me, and more than that, to support Spirit in bringing this work to Pittsburgh. So I want to start with Joanne Gago, the president of our board. Yeah. Who did amazing, long toiling to get our nonprofit status and many others. She does all the ugly, gritty, hateful, nasty work that someone like I would not want to do. Billy Weil, our vice president, who is really the technological creative guru for the organization and does a fabulous job. Kim Fitzpatrick and Judy Talbert, who are always in the background. Places to meet and handling logistics and food and everything that goes into the background. Barbara Fada, a Pathwork teacher and program committee. But when I arrived tonight, she was setting up the table. I say, you're on every committee. So, and she is. She does whatever it takes to keep the community alive and well and moving. Barbara Jean Nagrant. Program committee and bringing her passion for body work from her training as a Gestalt therapist body worker. Judy Kuchenmeister and Gay Kamini, who had the worst job of all, handling all our financial matters. And Pam Grove, who is our editor, our eyeballs on all the writing that goes public. She is our memory keeper on the board. And along with Billy, me, and Barb, she does some of our promotional material and is the, and again, as the memory keeper for the board. So please give them all a round of applause. Did you raise your hand, Pam? Does everybody know who you are? So thank you all for making, creating the holding and making these wonderful events. And this is just one of many events these people handle throughout the month. So number two, Joe. So tonight we're going to take a look at how perfectionism robs us of the joy and the satisfaction and the happiness that we can have in our lives. In its most extreme form, it leads to hatred and violence. And today, our hearts break for the outbreak of terrorism in France and the innocent people who died from the extremism of perfectionism. You're not allowed to challenge me or my faith or my beliefs, or I will kill you. While we in this room may not commit actual murder on innocent lives, this is hard to say, but it is true, we do something very similar by killing others with our negative thoughts. And we have to know that there is more to life than the brokenness that's within us and the brokenness that's within the world. The work that we do in Pathwork is to stare down the evil in the world. To develop our own consciousness is what we know that we can do, that can help us face and take away some of the room for evil in the world. If we take up more room with consciousness, there is less room for evil. We won't eradicate evil, but we can take up as much room as possible with consciousness. And we can meet the evil that is inside of us and outside of us so that we can back it up and take some of its room in the world. That's why we do this work. I love this point and I love this slide. According to the guide, the longing to connect deeply with the divine is planted in the core of all of our beings. We may not know it and we may not perceive it. It is painful to perceive, so we may close ourselves off from it. It's a painful longing, because we don't exactly know what to do with it. There actually are a number of people in this room, Judy being one of them, who walked through with me beyond our worst imaginings. Kathy did too. My coming face to face with an unfathomable evil in the world that posed a great threat even to my life. And I knew that I could not get through it, could not go on without a connection to the divine, to the spirit. I would not be safe in this world without it. And I recall in a lecture study group, and Kathy and Judy were actually referring to it last week, the depth of the pain of the disconnection from the divine and the longing to connect with the spirit and divine, because I knew that I and my personality and your personalities were insufficient to cope with what I was facing. And it was very painful to be longing for that divine and knowing how much I needed it in order to be able to survive psychologically and physically. And I broke down in a shattering kind of weeping in our meeting. And it was at that point and in that time that I decided to go to Philadelphia and enter the Pathwork Teacher Helpership Training Program. Spirit had to go to great lengths to get my attention so that I could fulfill the purpose of the divine for myself and for others on the planet, i.e. you. Thus eventually the birth of Pathwork in Pittsburgh. No matter how developed we are, there is a hole in us. It's more like a huge cavern at the core of our personality that is filled with emptiness, an ache, a longing for something that cannot be found in the personality, It cannot be found in others, and it cannot be found in the world as we know it. We try valiantly to fill this gaping cavern with externals, things and people, but it won't be filled for very long. Before it all falls out into the hole and the aching cavern that goes on, and it will not be satisfied. This, often unbeknownst to us, is our longing for the divine. The guide teaches that we have thought that the search for the divine is like mysterious and unattainable and beyond our grasp, but the wonder of pathwork is that this truth is within our reach. It is within our reach now. We find the divine by finding the real self in us, the ground of our being underneath the personality with all of its fears and its insecurities, and even underneath the hole in the cavern, which is at the root of our personality. It is not true that we cannot find the divine. Underneath all that we know ourselves to be, and underneath the hole and the cavern, is our real selves, our divine selves, and we long and we long and we long for it, even though we don't know it. Our real selves understand and know the spiritual laws of the universe. Our real selves know about the law of brotherhood. Our real selves know that we reap what we sow. They know that we're in error. They know that there's an infinite reality inside and outside of us that wants to be called upon to help us. Our real selves have the courage and the integrity to be our own individual, unique selves, and to give up the human attachment to appearance and social approval. The real self can experience real love and give and receive love. The more we do the work on the path, the more our real selves can infuse our being, bit by bit, step by step. Love that, Billy. It's a good one. Tonight we're studying the block of perfectionism in our personality. Each month, each lecture, we study a different block that blocks us from our real selves. Tonight it's perfectionism. The perfectionism that cuts us off from our real selves, that spoils our soul, spoils our relationship with others, and spoils the joy and happiness in our lives. The underwaters we swim in are, I have to be perfect in order to accept myself, and most certainly you have to be perfect for me to accept and love you. And life has to be perfect, or it is not worthy of my gratitude and blessing and participation. Okay, Billy says he loves it when I make a list. I must know the right answer. I must catch on. I must speak up. I must not make mistakes. I must look the right way. I must have no wrinkles, no fat. I must be tall. I must be short. I must not be bald. I must be large busted. I must be small busted. I must not trip and fall. You know how you feel when you trip and fall? I must not forget my lines. I have to know what to say and when to say it. I must never forget. I have to know when to speak up. I must not be criticized or challenged. I must not make you mad at me. I must fit in. I must get it done, and I must get it done right. I must be beautiful, successful, and intelligent, and have class. On and on we go on the dark human merry-go-round. Okay.
So 11 years ago, this night, exactly January 7th, on a Wednesday night, was my first date with Joanne. So tonight's our anniversary. And exactly at this time, 7 o'clock at night, you know, we went to dinner in Market Square. We had our first kiss. And been very happy about that. This is sort of a reflection of, so our 10th Christmas was 2 weeks ago. This is a little bit of a reflection of how that went.
So Joanne, how was your Christmas?
It was a disaster.
Oh, it was really great.
Do you know what I did on Christmas? I cooked for 12 hours.
Joanne,
that's what I did.
Loves to cook, and she spent the entire day in the kitchen, and we stayed out of her way the way she likes it.
Yeah, nothing says family like being alone in the kitchen for 12 hours.
Yeah, it was great. And my son came over early, and that was a big surprise. So I was really happy about that.
So his son comes over 3 hours early. So what am I supposed to do? Oh, I know. I get to feed another person another meal. That's what I get to do. And they go off and watch movies all day while the kitchen wench is doing all of the work.
So we were, like, really considerate by staying out of her way. So we went upstairs and watched the interview.
So I had told my kids to come at 4 or 5. At 3:30, my son texts me, "I just woke up. I won't get there until 7. Right? Thank you.
So when Marcus said he wasn't going to get there, I mean, Joanne was like half hour from like putting food on the table, now had to hold it for 3 hours. So it was, at first it was an upset, but I thought, hey, more Christmas.
Yeah, more cooking for Joanne.
We got to have an extra meal.
Yeah, I got to cook two dinners instead of just one.
It worked out great.
Yeah, it was perfect. Absolutely perfect. Overdone lasagna. Then I put the lamb in the oven so that it's done perfectly, and because I was upset about having to cook all day, my crown roast of lamb, it wasn't perfect. You know how it has to be like pink? It wasn't pink. I know, right? So, see, I'm so glad you all agree with me.
everything Joanne made was great. Even the lamb was a little more done than usual, but I think I like it that way better.
And the lasagna is overcooked now, because now I've cooked the lasagna twice.
And you know how lasagna is always better the second time you have
it? Oh, God, it was awful. So then finally, one bright spot, my son played the cello in high school.
So great. So we sneak in the cello to the living room, and that's not an easy thing to sneak. Hide it behind the sofa, leave Joanne
in the kitchen where she belongs.
And yeah, fortunately she was consigned to the kitchen line. And then we sit her down in the living room with her eyes closed. And then you hear the first, I can't imitate it.
It took my breath away. It really did. It was like one of the most glorious moments of the day.
So I had the audio recording going. I had the video recording going. I captured all of it.
And so now Bill has all of that. Bill has that. I don't have that. It's not on my phone. It's not on my iPad. And I don't know how to get this shit. So, you know, I may as well not have even had it because I don't have access to it. Dinner was ruined. Life was ruined. He gets me a brown purse. He gets me a brown purse, ladies and gentlemen. Brown. Do you ever see me wearing brown? No. What color purse would you have bought for me? Right? Everybody.
So.
Thank you.
So actually, what I got was this outfit. Now, you know, I love this outfit, so. I was really great Christmas present point of view. I think everyone was happy with their present.
Yeah. Yeah, I hate Christmas.
So,
I really do.
Oh, no, I've really come to love Christmas.
I worked so hard to have the most perfect Christmas, and it sucked.
It was probably the best Christmas ever.
So whose version do you like?
So what was perfect about that, folks? What do you see? What do you get? Is that how we are?
Yeah.
Yes. Is that how we are? And Joe, you demonstrated it beautifully. Yes, thank you. Obviously, there's not a person in this room who thinks that we can be perfect. Intellectually, we know that it is absurd. But emotionally, we are not wired to know that. We emotionally react as if it should be, you should be, and life should be perfect. So we strive and strive to pull it all together so that someday we can be happy. We have to be perfect to be able to accept ourselves and be happy, so we can never truly be happy. Furthermore, we use up a lot of our time blaming and judging ourselves for our mistakes and our failures and our imperfections in the past, which are plenty for all of us. If you don't have plenty of failures in your past, it is only because you put yourself into a box the size of a thimble and squeeze the very soul out of life and out of ourselves, and there's nothing there but a dead mechanical toy that when you wind it up, it moves around. Other than that, you made loads of mistakes and loads of failures. So the outcome to our program for perfection, which we are all wired by, is that it robs us of the joy and the pleasure that is available in the now. Angelie Zarian, an internationally, you've heard me talk about her before, known anthropologist, studied cultures all over the world, including indigenous cultures, and found that in every single culture, there was an addiction to perfection. It's a universal phenomenon. A little bit off the subject, but in case I don't mention it to you later, she also discovered three other addictions. One is the addiction to having to know, the addiction to intensity, which we either act out or we repress and deny, and I love this one, an addiction to what is missing that we complain about rather than what's present. And she studied all the world's cultures, so these are universal human patterns. It's not just us. And I think the Pathwork Lectures do a beautiful job of addressing these universal conditions. Okay, Joe. So our underlying emotional attitude is that problems and imperfections should not exist, certainly in the self, but most certainly not in the other and not in the world. But you know what the truth is? We would rot from sweetness without the texture, the grit, the challenge of our brokenness and our imperfections. We would rot and we would be bored out of our brains. We simply need a major attitude shift. An attitude adjustment, and that's what we're working on tonight. Again, emotionally, we react as if problems and challenges should not be. They shouldn't exist. I mean, just pay attention to some of your emotional reactions when you drop your keys down the elevator, when you get a flat tire, when it's cold in the room, when you bounce a chair, whatever it is. How does it feel? It shouldn't be. It shouldn't exist, right? Isn't that how we hold it emotionally? I should not have problems. Most certainly you should not have problems. And life should not have problems. So we feel with judgment and anger and even hate because of whatever, fill in the blank. There are only three options here for you. One is to know, and this is a really, really important piece, that you resent the hell out of it. Period, the end. Can you presence that resentment? I resent your problems. They make me mad. I resent them. I resent the problems of the world. And you have three choices. One is that you can resent them, and it's so offensive to your idealized self-image and this sweet, serene person that you are, that you send it away and you don't even know how much you resent. And guess what? It comes out in very twisted and distorted ways, maybe even in the form of illness. The second choice is that you can resent it, and this is where most of us err, and we think we are justified in resenting. What you are doing is terrible and off, and never mind that we do it too. So we justify the resentment, and even if we don't act it out on the other person by telling them what a schmuck they are, we're resenting the hell out of them inside. That's who we are. This was one of the hardest things for me to have to face up to in myself. It was like such an affront to my serenity mask, my image of who I think I am or who I should be. And the third one is that we feel that resentment. We feel bad about it. We feel ashamed about it. It's painful to us, and we know that it is an error. So rather than acting it out on another person, rather than holding it against ourselves as bad and wrong, we go to work on transforming it. There's no other way. There is no other way except to face and know that about ourselves. And however long it takes, we have to do the work. With some in more intimate situations with me, I've share that I had a friend who triggered me in a particular way for 2 years, literally. 2 years. I faced my resentment. I owned it. I cried about it. I hated myself. It took me that long before it started to break up and break down, and I could be... That's the kind of work it takes. You don't just say, oh, I can't resent here, stop. Can't do that. That's not how we're designed. We have to work it and work it and work it. So this is who you are, whether you want to admit it or not. It's who we are. The first thing we do is think we have to judge and blame ourselves or others, or in our fears we won't change if we don't blame and judge them or blame and judge ourselves. We think it's helpful. So if there is anything that we can do to change that which is broken in another person, it would be if we were able to love them, which we aren't. We can do a lot of work to maybe get there, but if we could be a factor in that change, it would be that. Not correcting, teaching, judging, you got to change it. Has it ever worked? No, doesn't work. But the truth is that underneath the judgment and the hatred is some tender feelings of hurt, some need that is not getting met. I'm going to share with a testimonial, and then Barbara Jean and Billy and Barb will share with some testimonials. I discovered some years back that if I have a therapist or a teacher or a lecturer, and I felt this a lot with some of my pathwork teachers who would come stumbling into the classroom and their lectures falling out of their bags and they weren't prepared, and I hated them. I couldn't stand them. I ended up in one class accidentally calling one of them Lucy Goosey. It just slipped. Remember that, Kathy? It just slipped right out of my mouth. I called her Lucy Goosey. But what I want you to get is like how much I resent if I think someone who is to teach me or to care for me, if they seem indifferent or they're careless about it or they don't do it well. I mean, I just rip them apart inside. So I knew to work that. You know, I could like really make a case that she was a sloppy teacher. How much would that help me? I hated her for being a sloppy teacher. I hated her for being imperfect. Like I don't have imperfection. So I worked it and I worked it and I worked it and I worked it. And finally what I got to is if you are incompetent or you are acting in an indifferent way, I feel rejected. And that takes me back to the pain of my relationship with my parents, who were wrought up in their own broken down lives and weren't able to show me affection and holding and constancy and continuity. So it was really helpful when I started to learn that when I judge and blame, something tender in me has gotten triggered, a fear, a hurt, an old pain. So the worst thing we can do is land at the resentment phase. Because we can justify our resentment. We human beings do stupid, awful, horrible things. So we can justify resenting, right? There's my resentment. That will not serve us, them, or our soul if we don't work it to get beyond it. Okay, Billy, do you have a resentment?
Sure. Beyond in the transformation program, and you know, very regularly there'll be things where we're going to go around the room. There's 18 people, some 18 people, 16 people. You know, they'll say, you know, everybody take a minute to share about something, right? And invariably, a whole bunch of people take like 6 minutes. And, you know, sometimes I probably do also, but when they're doing it, it shows up for me. I have the visceral, how dare you, reaction. And how can you be so unconscious to not...
Resentment?
No, it's a tremendous resentment. And what I look to see, like, where, you know, what's the sweet need, as Sue says, underneath it. It's, you know, when I was a little kid... Growing up, I never got hurt. My dinner table, my father, everybody was like, you know, ADD and crack and wise and everybody, and I never got hurt. And I just feel like, well, here I am in TP to be heard, and now I'm not going to be heard because everyone else is, you know, using up all the time.
That's beautiful, Billy. Thank you. Barb?
And I'm going to, you know, you brought up one that was very powerful for me when you talked about teachers in TP. I had the same with a therapist or a teacher. If they said one thing that I thought was wrong or did something that I thought was wrong, I would just feel this incredible resentment towards them, which I would never express, though, and I would never tell them about it, because I was so desperate for help that I daren't alienate them in any way, although they picked this energy up from me, because then for sure I wouldn't get any help. But and what it brought up for me, I came to realize, is if they weren't perfect, how were they going to help me? That they had to be perfect, and I was so... and of course, that was... My parents had so many problems. I saw them as overwhelmed with their lives. They had so many problems, and there were times I desperately needed help. I had a problem, and I needed to go to someone, and I didn't have anyone to go to. How could I burden them with my problem when they had were overwhelmed with their problem? And it brought up, I need help, and there's nobody to help.
So there was a childhood wound of not being emotionally attended. Yeah, that's beautiful. Barbara Jean, do you have one?
When I thought about how perfectionism has really affected me, what I realized is that I put so much expectations on myself. And just an example that came up in meditation that I had forgotten about was, so I, you know, living in an apartment and paying rent, and something went wrong with the faucet in my bathroom. And I don't even remember what it was that went wrong. And it was still usable, but it was broken. I was petrified to call and ask for it to be replaced. I thought for sure I was gonna have to pay all sorts of money, and I did something wrong, and something was gonna get worse. It took me, I mean, literally, as an adult who's somewhat competent in the world, it took me 8 months. And I honestly, I was anxious. I was really anxious, and I was afraid, and I thought, they're going to come in, and I'm going to lose my apartment. Now, it's not like I didn't pay my rent, and, you know, I don't even remember what it was. And when I finally called, I was really, I mean, like, I was just, oh, it's, I'm sure they're going to have something they're going to say. I felt like I was going to lose my apartment, and I called, they came in the next day, and it was fixed, and I was like, God, there was nothing bad that happened? Seriously? And when I really paid attention to what that was about, there was just this sense of, I'm going to do it wrong, I'm never enough, I always screw it up and I make it harder for other people. And when I realized I'm the youngest of six, there's 15 years difference between me and my oldest sister, and I always felt like I kept everybody behind, I was the one always screwing up, I always made it bad, everybody else knew how to do it, and I expect I already know how to do it, and I'm not going to make a mess, and I'm not going to burden people. And when I feel like it's going to be a burden to somebody else, it freaks me out. So today, when I'm on the way here and I drop the keys, and there's no way to get here besides have my friend get burdened to go to my house and get the extra key and come back, I didn't freak out quite as much, and Judy is a wonderful friend, but it's still that sense of, see, I fucked up. And it's not just that I fucked up and I'm imperfect, but I burden the people around me who love me, and that makes me unlovable.
Mm-hmm. That's bad and wrong, and it should not be, and it should not have happened. Yeah, it's dangerous. That's a good one. All right, great.
Next one.
One of the big problems is that we have not extinguished in our emotional thinking, if that is a word, that this exists. It's just kind of like the water that we swim in. We don't, you know, we don't see how it's operating. It's unknown to us. We don't know that we reject our imperfectness because we think we should be perfect. Does that make sense? We don't know that we're rejecting something that can't help but exist. We think it shouldn't exist.
Sue, could you give an example there?
Well, I mean, we just, unless we stop like we are right now and actually examine it, if I make a mistake, I make plenty of them, I shouldn't have, and that was bad and wrong. So I don't have the capacity to see that, oh, I'm judging myself for being imperfect. I think I'm being wrong for being imperfect. So that's what we don't see. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So we buy in rather than, there I am doing my imperfect judgment about myself again. We can't help but make mistakes all the time.
Okay. So we just think bad about ourselves.
Yeah, we think bad about ourselves rather than distinguishing that here's my imperfectness and I'm being hard on myself about that and I can make a different choice. We don't know to do that because we just think that's the normal thing to do. You're not supposed to be imperfect, right? Raise your hand.
Right.
You're not supposed to be, period, the end. So our resistance to our imperfectness cripples us. And because we are blind to this, we judge our imperfectness, it shouldn't be, we can't take a really good, deep look inside ourselves and see the ways that we are imperfect and that needs to be changed and can be. If we let ourselves see it and allow ourselves, I don't have this handled here, and there's something to handle, and there's a next step to take. If we can't look in and see our imperfectness, we can't do that. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And we also, if we don't look in and see how imperfect we are, we don't know what the things are that we have to come to acceptance about. It is real that there are certain things that happen that by our standards would be imperfect, that we have to accept because they're inevitable. There's nothing that we can do about them. Can you give me some examples?
Hunger.
What?
World hunger,
all right. What's something more personal?
I can't play the piano.
You can't play the piano and you long to play the piano. Yeah.
Aging,
yeah.
I can't be tall.
And you cannot be tall, right? And unless you go inside and see that you are judging that imperfectness in yourself, you can't go to work on making peace with that's something I need to accept. So because we don't take a good look and we can't see with clear eyes, we can't see what needs to be changed and what needs to be accepted, it's just a big boiling pot of stew in there. Kind of undistinguished. Okay. I hope this is 9. Somewhere along here in a few minutes, we're going to come to my imperfectness. Even on the path, in path work, we are gripped by our attachment to perfection. You look so funny over there under your scarf. And our rejection of imperfection. I still have problems and I'm on the path. Furthermore, someone recently said this to me, Billy, I'll out you. Sue, she still has problems and she's been working on the path for over 25 years. Why should I commit to the path? Actually, he said, you know, like, kind of be careful about how much of that, you know, you say, because, you know, people will think, you know, why are they here? Right, Billy? So why should I commit to this path? You know, don't let other path workers see how screwed up I am. They'll think I'm not doing the work. All right, here's the clinker. Actually, doing the work is letting others see how screwed up you are.
Yes.
That's doing the work. That's being on the path.
No wonder Patrick rose so slowly.
But we think, I should be there by now. I'm a path worker. I must have already arrived. I shouldn't be having this reaction. So I frantically run around trying to do it perfectly because I'm not going to be happy until I get it 100%, right? And if I don't get it for 100%, then maybe I should just forget it. I'll be a slug and while away my time. Or, here's a good one, I will suffer silently in my feeling of inadequacy because I am not a perfect human being. That's the greatest pain to suffer. And this is to be human. This is something that came through to me from spirit as I was preparing this lecture. I'm clear it didn't come from my mind. Spirit said to me that maybe the only real, true inadequacy is for us not to tap our opportunity to grow and heal and change. That's the only inadequacy there is. Period, the end. So I'll give it to you again. Maybe the only real, true imperfection and inadequacy is not to tap our opportunity to grow and to heal and to change. So pull out your journals for a moment. And I want you to take just a few moments, just write a short paragraph, kind of bullet it, and we'll do some sharing as a group. How has not accepting your imperfectness impacted and affected your life with yourself, with other people, with the world? Just drop down in a meditative moment. What's it done to you? How has it made you suffer? Okay? Who would be willing to share? Okay, I'll tell you.
Just like one sentence of it?
Just a little bit.
My perfectionism inhibits me from taking chances at risking and reaching for my dreams.
Hmm. Great. Someone else? Yes.
My feelings get dammed up, and then some crap goes in the dam, and then I have a floodgate coming out.
Okay, good. Mm-hmm.
I started thinking about it, and it seemed like in some ways my perfectionism has led me to really work hard and be tenacious and maybe achieve more self-growth than I would have without it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Sometimes it would, that desire would paralyze me for periods of time in addressing problems because I didn't know the answer, and it would hurt so bad.
Good. Somebody else? Mm-hmm.
Well, I just feel like I never, ever really have a true solid win because whatever I do, I can always think of, do the skit kind of thing. I kind of came off as like I planned it. But you know what? I really could have done it better.
You're right.
Because I'm so busy trying to figure out how I'm supposed to be.
Yes.
And I'm not really available for the conversation. And I get defensive sometimes and try to have a quick response in a way that it really limits the conversation or the intimacy.
Right. And you're not really there. There's no contact or connection. Mm-hmm. Great. Another one? Yes.
It keeps me from wanting more. It keeps me from asking for more. And it keeps me from deserving, feeling like I deserve more.
Great. Yes. It causes us, the guy talks about it this in this lecture, to suppress our longings and our wants and our needs because we're so imperfect we don't deserve them, so we don't deserve to reach out for them. Good one. Somebody else? Yes.
I feel like it creates kind of tunnel vision so that what I set up in myself, like I will do everything perfectly so I'll get this big picture, but that isn't what happens. It never ends up. The end is never a result of the means. What happens in those means is destructive.
Yes.
Often.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. The frantically trying to get there. You know, all kinds of negative things come from that. Walking on other people, anxiety, sleeplessness, a zillion things. Yes.
So I feel like I missed the whole big thing that I'm going for.
Yeah.
Because of the thing
right.
I think is going to get me all
that. Right. Beautiful. Somebody else? A couple more. Katrina?
I can't be free and spontaneous.
Right. Right. Because how am I going to say it? Got to say it the right way. What are they going to think of me? Yes, right.
My real self never gets...
Right. Exactly. That's the saddest part of all. Our real self can't be there when we are with each other. Couple more. Joe?
I see it in my kids. My one son took on my perfectionism, and I see how he suffers. And then the other kid's like, "Yeah, I never mind." And
I can't be perfect, so I ain't doing nothing.
I'll be 4 hours late for.
Yeah. Those are the two extremes. That's beautiful. Yeah, Alexander.
I think people can sense my perfectionism, like towards them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like. Random people be like, oh, you know, hey, I recycled my pop can yesterday. I'm like, why are you telling me this?
You better measure up so he can get your approval and your acceptance because he feels that perfectionistic energy. Yes?
I think on a really negative side, it created in me a really aggressive approach to people in my trying to get them to do work perfectly. And I think I killed a lot of creativity and contribution and
connection.
People felt, I had the word that fell out of my brain. It was perfect, but alien, you know, just pushed away from me. Yeah, it was perfect.
Yeah. Right. Great. One more. Yes.
Well, I think at the bottom of all the, you know, as you go down and restrict feelings and are isolated and, you know, all the things that are going to talk about, I think then it comes out in aggression, in, you know, aggressive driving, making snide remarks, doing, you know, really scuzzy.
Yes.
You know, comes out the side.
Absolutely. One more. Mike.
I don't feel the same. I can really be loved by anyone else. So I become
great one. How many people in the room feel that?
All right.
Yeah, great one. Yeah. I don't really deserve love until I get perfect. Yeah. That's a good one. Thank you, guys. Good sharing. Okay. So as we have been talking, that in some cases the way our perfectionistic demands impact us is, forget it, I can't do that, I can't have that, I can't be that, like you said, Mike. So, you know, and these are usually ideals that we have absorbed about how we're supposed to look, how we're supposed to act, what we're supposed to have, what we're supposed to do. There's a zillion things that we have absorbed from our culture, our cultural values and norms that have nothing to do with who we are. So, you know, like, fuck it, you know? Doesn't matter, you know, forget it. I don't want to again have it because I can't measure up to it. Okay, so one of the things, and then Barbie's going to do a piece of teaching on emotions. One of the things that happens from this perfectionistic demand is that we start using our emotions to manipulate with. And Barbie's going to talk about this. And what we're doing is that we're trying to bend life or force life to our perfectionistic demands. So, you can do the next slide. I don't know why I didn't speak. I guess I did speak to that one when we talk about we internalize all of these external values. We take them in, we hold them against ourselves, and then we can enjoy the job that we're doing as parents or as teachers or as therapists, or, you know, because we didn't do it perfectly. So we write ourselves off. Okay, bye.
Even if, what I realized recently is thinking about this, it's not only that we don't enjoy it, but we don't take in other people having some positive experience of it either. I realized how many times I've missed the support that was available to me, even as I'm wanting more support, because it didn't register.
I couldn't take it in because I'm not perfect enough to receive it. That's a great one.
So I undo it.
Okay, bye.
Next. So, you know, the guide says that, speaking into the wrong thing here.
The light worked.
Oh my God.
This is a demonstration of imperfection, right?
Look at it. Okay. Our perfectionism leads us to manipulate our emotions. And the worst part of this is we are so often totally unaware that we're doing that. Because we have been doing it for so long, it's become second nature to us. And there are essentially two primary ways we do this. And that is...
prayer.
We over emote or exaggerate our feelings. For example, you know, when I'm doing that, I discovered is using words like never and always. You never listen to me. You're always telling me what to do. You know, you can, that's the little kid, and that's, and then, of course, I like to, too, drag up the past all these other times that you did it, and just really get that rolling and whip it up. And when I'm alone, I do that in my head all by myself. The person isn't there, but I'm thinking these, they become a monster in 5 minutes. And the second way that we do that is by, just the reverse, is by squashing our feelings down. So we may acknowledge that we're having a feeling, but we may deny how intensely we're having that feeling, or we may deny that we're having it all together. And that can happen very quickly. We're not even aware that the feeling is, we have been shoving it down automatically for so long. An example of that would, I know I'm doing that, I've come to learn, as soon as I say out loud or to myself, I don't care.
Yeah.
Didn't bother me. That doesn't bother me. I don't, you know, the truth is, if I really didn't care, I wouldn't have bothered saying that because I really didn't care. You know, and in that, there's a helplessness, you know, that I give up. There's nothing I can do in the hopelessness. And I cannot get this sucker to just be aimed just right. I don't know.
We can hear you. Sorry, we can hear
you. It's so imperfect. Okay, here I have to do. Here we go.
Okay.
I don't know how you do that, Sue. So in both of these instances, we're using what the guide calls a forcing current to either build up our emotions or to push them away. And this current arises from our unmet and repressed needs. And this is really key. The more unaware we are of these needs, the stronger this current. So once we bring some awareness to the unmet need that's underlying either the repression or the exaggeration, that's when we can start to relieve it, because then we get in touch with the real feeling. Okay, so using this forcing current, we whip up our emotions out of a sense of urgency that's driven by our unconscious, which believes that, so in this, we believe that if my emotions are strong enough, my need will get met. Or sometimes we are so fearful and pessimistic about ever getting our needs met, we push them out of our awareness and deny them. I will never ask for help because I know I'm never going to get it, for example. But in both of these instances, we're crippling our real feelings and we hinder the unfolding of our intuition, our creativity, and our spontaneous expression, because we're squashing our real self and denying it. And we're not being real. And we end up living shallow lives, and we end up substituting other faculties for emotional ones. So, for example, we go up into our heads. You know, we really value our mental faculties, or perhaps our physical abilities, or perhaps, you know, busying ourselves doing. And all of these manipulations that we do with emotions, too, are connected with the masks that we've adopted as a strategy for our happiness. So, you know, we've got, for example, a power mask will use a lot of aggression in a very dramatic way to get needs met. So power masks will use intimidation. Now, if our strategy is to withdraw or put on a mask of serenity, we tend to repress and deny our feelings. We are above it all, and it's like, for me, the vision I see when I'm being serene is it's like I'm in an ivory tower and I'm looking down at everyone else having those messy feelings, but not me. And all of this, yeah, it's the messiness of feelings we don't want to deal with. And the submissive type, okay, I will use over-emotionalism often to get others to feel sorry for them and take care of them, because ultimately they want the other to submit to them and do what they want. And I do this, like, I'll feel sorry for myself because others don't love me the way I think they ought to after all I've done for them. I don't understand. Now, and here's the tough part, or I found this to continue to find this to be challenging. How can I tell what my real feelings are? And how can I tell what my real self is? Because when I'm angry and caught up, hey, that is my, I just really feel angry. And I think that's the bottom line. And we become, thank you, Joanne.
Well,
Sue
told me.
Oh, thank you,
Sue.
I forgot the response. Yeah, perfect. We are so used to either whipping up emotions that we've superimposed over our real feelings as a defense, because it's a feeling that is imperfect, we shouldn't be having it. That, and it's all of these defenses are a way to resist feeling the pain of not having our needs met. And of course, we've repressed that we even have a need that is unmet. And so we really feel stuck. These whipping up our emotions or repressing them, it's become second nature to us, and we no longer know what we're really feeling or who we really are, because we've become so buried under our defensive reactions. And the guide's solution, the awareness of what is really going on with us, what we are really feeling, can be reached only by quiet observation when we are alone. Not to say that in group and with the support of another, we can't begin to tap into that. But ultimately, day after day, when we are with ourselves, it is really incumbent upon us to take responsibility for just being alone with ourselves. Discovering our genuine feelings will come when we relax by ourselves and allow our true feelings to surface. And this takes time, practice, and lots of patience. Which means, and often, that the very first thing we end up sitting with is our impatience and our anxiety. And I do not want to sit here. And why might that be? Because the guide also says, we're terrified of ourselves. We are absolutely terrified. And for me, I spent 20 years trying to meditate by myself. But as soon as I sat down, I have to go do this. Let me do this. Oh, I'm too anxious to sit right now. And it was fear. I was absolutely terrified of myself. But I didn't know that was why I couldn't sit there and why I kept getting up. And so clearly, all of this means having the willingness to go through a maze of experiencing in that seat all by ourselves all sorts of painful emotions, and many that we've superimposed over our real feelings. And it means not letting our thoughts whip them up by building our case and exaggerating and thinking about the person, and not letting our thoughts shame us into denying the feelings that are really arising. And we often definitely have to ask for spiritual help to just allow ourselves to experience those feelings. That's what I found helpful. The guide, I already said that. And so because we are so afraid of ourselves, I mean, that's one thing to sit with, is to sit and say, I don't want to sit here. I feel scared. I feel scared. I don't want to sit here. Whatever is in that sitting alone with oneself to stay with and to ask for help. And that's it on emotions.
Okay. Yay.
So may you all really feel.
Okay, thank you.
In your next sitting.
Great.
I actually think that it's easier for people who whip their emotions up and make cases and are ranting and raving and hollering. I'm not one of those. Because at least I can say to you, if you're whipped up like that, you can now say to yourself, I know I'm not in truth. Okay? Down underneath all of that intensity is the real feeling. Hurt or fear or scare or disappointment or loss. For someone who operates as a reason type with a serenity mask, and people who are close to me know this about me well, I don't even know that I'm irritated and upset with you because I don't want to know that. I don't want to know. I don't want to be that person. So I downplay and send it away, and of course it comes out in all sorts of perverted ways. It leaks out, people feel my aloofness, people feel my distance, but that one's a little harder to get. But either case, if it's whipped up, you're not in truth, and if you're above it being serene, you're not in truth. Okay, number 14, we're still in sync. We're going to not be in sync here in a moment. I'm going to have to wing it. So there is absolutely only one answer, one solution, and one direction, and that is coming home to ourselves. Whether that means being in meditation or journaling or talking with yourself, on a hike or listening to yourself in the shower, whatever it means, it is the only answer. To be with ourselves, to go inside, and to find it all, the strong, the weak, the beautiful, the ugly. Where is my self-will, my pride, my fear involved in this reaction that I'm having? Where am I suffering from some standard that I have swallowed whole from society about who I'm supposed to be and I may not be and may not want to be? From my religion, my parents, some other authority? What am I feeling and reacting to that is my demand for some sort of perfection? You just want to go in and snoop around and noodle around and be interested in seeing it all, every bit of it. The only path is to become aware of what is going on in there, and it's often nasty. I'm going to say that again. I have to say it a lot to me. Some of you are real connected with how nasty it is in there. To noodle around and go in there and see what's going on, what you're experiencing, and especially notice what's nasty. All of it, including eventually my real feelings, are going to lead us to our real, true, beautiful selves. So in order to do this, we've talked about it already, we need to spend spiritual time alone. We especially need to face our resentment that we aren't perfect and that you aren't perfect and that life isn't perfect. The truth is, the world is not perfect. I love that the guide said this in the lecture. When we are in truth, we are in God. And the truth is, I'm imperfect, you are imperfect, life is imperfect, but our soul doesn't accept that. That's what we're up against. Everything is imperfect, and our soul does not want that to be the case. That's our dilemma. That's the truth that we have to be in, and we have to be able to see. And when we are in truth, we are in the divine. Another thing is that we don't want to take the time, as Barb was saying, and to truly feel what we have to feel, like, and to seek guidance from the divine. Like, as I sat down, got ready to sit down to do the meditation for tonight, I didn't want to do it. I didn't have time. I had to get the slides to Billy. I had to make a program out for all the program things. Blah, blah, blah. I don't have time. I said, stop it. Stop it and sit down and meditate for 20 minutes. You need guidance for this work tonight. You need help from spirit, from the divine. It's not up to you. And I made myself. And thank goodness I did, because then wonderful things started coming in for me as I prepared this lecture for you. Okay?
Sue, can I ask you a question?
Yes?
You said that the soul doesn't want to accept that we're imperfect. Mm-hmm. I don't think I understood that.
I that's a good question. I figured someone would ask about that. When we talk about soul, we're talking about the substance that we have imprinted our thoughts, our beliefs, our opinions on. We're not talking about our spiritual divine self. Does that help?
Yes. Thank you.
So it's the soul substance that has in it all that we have come to believe and think and feel that's in distortion. It's in the soul. It's in our soul substance from the condition of being human. All right, this is where my slides start to get tripped up a little bit, so let me switch over here. When we can learn to look through our heart rather than our judgmental minds or our critical eyes, we can see how imperfect we are, and we can feel the vulnerability of that. We can see what the next little step in our growth might be. Again, Angelisa Rian would say, rather than trying to be perfect, try to be excellent. Like, what would be the next little step to take in your growth? That's excellence. That's available to us. What am I to learn from this particular painful interaction that I have, where I'm fighting my imperfection, or I'm fighting yours, or I'm fighting the imperfection in the world? What is at play here that I can learn about and move along in my evolution? This makes imperfection perfect. The song. The peak. Back up and do the peak song.
Oh, okay. I need a second. I still need a second.
You're allowed a second. You don't have to be perfect. Whatever it takes.
Yes, there is. Oh, man.
Maybe we'll have to bring five pieces of equipment next time.
I got it.
May your altar once or twice does my way out blood and fire. Bad decision. That's alright. Welcome to my silly life. Mystery. Thank you.
Daisy, Daisy.
Hey, we can carry up it, I think.
We're having tonight.
Yeah.
Billy, help.
Did it off?
It's not on.
I didn't turn it on. Or off.
Last test. That's weird.
It was working all night. We didn't even know.
It's unplugged. Psychologically, it got louder for me, actually.
Turn it that way.
Yeah, into her face, yeah.
I don't know what happened. Regardless, okay. All right.
Maybe my old raggedy ass stand and newsprint was better after all. So when we go inside to see all the beauty and the mess there, we especially want to look for where there is no emotional acceptance. We want to feel this pain, grieve this separation from our true self that is all loving and compassionate, and see if I can move to an attitude of tolerance for everything that I find there. To honor it enough that I'm able to work with it. Barbara Jean is going to do a little embodiment exercise with us, giving us an experience of what it feels like when we go in and we hate our imperfectness, and what it's like when we go in and we have a tolerance for our imperfectness.
So I'm going to invite you all to just take a minute in your chair and take a deep breath in, and as you breathe in, just tighten everywhere. And as you exhale, just let go and feel the chair supporting you. And take a deep breath in and just tighten everywhere. And as you exhale, let go and feel how the chair supports you. And one last time, as you take a deep breath in, just tighten. And as you exhale, let go, let your muscles soften, feel your feet on the floor, and let the chair support you. What I invite you to do is either to have your eyes closed or to look somewhere in front of you or with your gaze in one position. And just become aware of something that you really find hard accepting about your imperfection. Something that you really struggle with. And really try to bring this to yourself in your mind, perhaps an experience of the last time you had this experience of yourself. And just try to kind of re-experience that moment and see what you feel inside. Notice your judgments that may come to your mind. Notice particular thoughts, feelings. Notice what's happening with your breath. Where do you feel your tightening in yourself? Do you feel like you're holding your breath at all? But really bring this experience of what you most have difficulty tolerating inside yourself. And notice where you feel it, like you hold it in your body. Perhaps it's in your tight shoulders, or your neck pushing back, or your crink in your neck, or perhaps it's in a fist in your hand, or perhaps it's a tightening in your belly, or a pulling in your pelvis, or a tightening of your thighs. Just notice. And let yourself really kind of go over some of the mean things that you often say to yourself about how you should not be experiencing yourself this way. You should be different. And notice what happens to that feeling inside in your breathing. As if having the experience of being imperfect in this way, this particular struggle, makes you somehow less. Just notice what that feels like and where you carry that inside. And now recognizing that this is something that you really struggle with, that you really wish was different, see if you can breathe in a sense of compassion with your breath, just bringing your awareness and your breath to this place. Not trying to change yourself, not even trying to take away the tension, simply bringing your awareness and your breath to whatever part of yourself you feel most affected by your struggle. So if it's that you feel your shoulders tightening, just to feel your shoulders tightening and bring a sense of, yeah, this is really hard for me. I really struggle with not accepting myself given my struggle with this. And breathe into that space. And then see if you can tap into a sense of a loving presence surrounding you from the inside, all the way flowing from the inside of you and surrounding you with a loving presence of heart energy. Seeing you with all the struggles that you have as exactly where you need to be at this moment. Seeing you with love and all the longing in your heart and all the ways that you have struggled with this imperfection, and knowing that you are the very place you need to be. And see if you can breathe in that sense of love, that sense of compassion, that sense of presence that is within you and surrounds you. Not needing to change you at all, simply embracing you like a hug. seeing you in the beauty that you have, in the imperfection that we all are. And just notice what you feel. And take a few breaths, just really breathing in that sense of compassion. And I'm going to invite you to breathe in and say these words to yourself, or hear after you hear me say them. May I be filled with loving kindness. May I be well. May I be peaceful and at ease. May I be happy. And really take in these words as the loving presence wanting you to be well, to be filled with loving kindness, to be happy, and to be at peace with yourself as you are. And just breathe that in. And take a moment and simply let yourself appreciate that you've taken the time to connect, and notice that part of yourself that embodies kind of where you hold that imperfection or how you hold yourself with it. And that's something that you can bring your own loving awareness to in your breath, in your own meditation at any time. Not to change it, but to bring a loving presence to it and to see what happens in that relationship. Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara Jean. I really felt that shift in my body from the pain of hating that imperfection to the comfort of it's still there, but feel kind toward it. My body just relaxed. It was beautiful. Thank you. So we have to create some new intentions for how we live. From, I am not here to be perfect. I am here to grow. And I am here to find my real self. And the more I accept my humanness, the more I will grow. And to me, the essence of this lecture was, happiness doesn't come, and fulfillment doesn't come from something that is outside of us. It can be rich, it can be delightful, it can be enjoyable, but it's not what brings us meaning and fulfillment. What brings fulfillment and meaning is going inside and being with our experience, all of it, feeling it, distinguishing it, working with it, and taking the next step in our growth and our evolution. That is the true meaning and fulfillment that is available in life, period, the end. And that's what the path is about. The more I accept my humanness, the more I will grow. The more we can go in and find the tender, cutting, hurting pain of the condition of being a very limited human being, you thereby can be fulfilled tonight and tomorrow just as you are right now. You can taste the joy as your real self eases in. You can't make that happen. You can just do the work of when you go in there, rather than judging and blaming your imperfections. You go in there, as Barbara Jean gave us an experience, with tolerance and compassion and love. then our real selves will begin to emerge into our lives. It will ease in little bit by little bit by little bit. And that's why we're doing this work on this path. We're going to do one other brief meditation, Barb. Let's make it short because time is close, but I don't want to miss doing the Tonga meditation for just a moment.
Barbara Dean really prepared me, at least anyway, for this one, because I still feel a great sense of relaxation. So we're going to, I want you to think of an imperfection within yourself, something you tend to be very critical about, feel shame about, feel guilt about, and allow yourself to really drop into the feeling that arises with this. A painful feeling around an imperfection that you have. And just allow it to naturally arise. And breathe deeply into the feeling, just as you were doing with the earlier meditation. Just really allow your breath to flow through your whole body. Allow that pain to disperse, to expand. Breathe into it. And then I want you to imagine, visualize, in the way that suits you best, standing in front of you, another person who shares this imperfection and this pain. And I want you to breathe in with each inhalation. Imagine you are breathing in the pain from that person. And on the exhalation, imagine you're exhaling light. With very slow, relaxed breath, to breathing in their pain that is your pain, and exhaling light. And then I want you to imagine other people surrounding this person who also share that pain, that imperfection, and that pain around it. And imagine you're breathing in all of their pain along with yours. And as you exhale and relax, imagine light coming forth and flooding all of these people. And allow more and more people. Allow your imagination to bring in every person in the world who shares this imperfection and feels this pain around it. And imagine that you are breathing in that pain and exhaling light to all. And feel that shared pain. As you breathe it in, feel the shared pain and allow the compassionate light to envelop all. And then now gradually just bring your awareness back to yourself. And when you're ready, bring yourself to the room and slowly open your eyes. And thank you all. And thank you all for venturing out on this freezing cold night. Thank you. I mean, incredible. How perfect of you.
So the ultimate answer is that we do not have to solve all of our problems to be happy in life. We can be fulfilled and have meaning and joy and pleasure when we can go deep in our inside ourselves, see what's there, work with what's there, bless and comfort what's there. That's where the true meaning in life can come from.
And finally, might we come to truly accept and allow and maybe even celebrate our pitiful, broken, limited, imperfect humanness that we all share in common. Good night.